Still learning how to use a computer there, Terry?
Unfortunately, yes.
This is going to accidentally go from an RC podcast to a comedy podcast.
And welcome to the very first episode of the HobbyView RC Roundup podcast. Okay, for those wondering who we are, here's a quick intro. Pay attention. We'll only do this once. Hey, my name is Fitz Walker. I'll be hosting this podcast. I've been in the hobby since sometime in the late 80s, earlier than that, if you can count Control Line and various other free flight activities. I currently run the HobbyView YouTube page. I pride myself in doing all sorts of modeling, whether or not it's air, sea, land, whatever.
Centerfold.
Centerfold. I specialize in centerfold models, especially the remote controlled kind.
It just came out.
Hey, you know, I gotta broaden my horizons.
I'll shut up. All right, try again, buddy.
Well, anyways, I've written for a few different publications, and my current thing I do now is the HobbyView YouTube page, which reviews all sorts of RC models, and anything else is probably going to be too boring. But so I'm going to hand it over to Lee Ray. Lee, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Lee. I've been in this hobby for over 35 years. Got started because my father was flying U-Control when he was young. And he got me started on gliders when I was about 10. I got this bug, and I've been flying gliders, glow fuel planes, and electric planes ever since. And as Fitz mentioned to me, I have designed a popular foamy kit called the Thunder and Lightning. And I really enjoy this hobby.
All right, Lee, thanks for that. Next up, we have Terry Dunn. Terry, tell us about yourself.
Hello. Hi, this is Terry, and much like Fitz and Lee, I've been in the hobby for as long as I can remember. I started out doing Control Line with my grandfather and my dad and my uncles, and just kind of never stopped from there. And now my primary interest is electric airplanes and quadcopters. I used to be an engineer, but now I am a full-time writer, and I write on RC and aviation-type topics, mostly for Tested.com and also for other RC publications.
All right. Thanks for that, Terry. All right. Well, next I'd like to introduce what I call On the Workbench, where we'll just do a quick roundtable and see what new and exciting projects each of us have started or maybe finished. And so we'll get started with... Terry, what's new on the workbench?
Well, usually what's most recent on my workbench is a review that I'm working on. Right now, I'm tying up a review on the Blade Mach 25 Quad Racer. And right behind it, I've got the Blade Chroma 4K, which is an aerial photography quad with a 4K camera. And just this week, I finished up the 3D robotic solo, which was really cool. I was impressed with that one. In terms of my own projects, I think the next on the line is the F-14 that I got from UFITS. I was looking at it the other day, and it's got a lot of wires, but I think with an 8-channel receiver, it ought to go together pretty quickly.
Yeah, it should be no problem. I think 8-channel is plenty enough, so hopefully I labeled everything. If not, good luck.
Right? Yeah. That's a meaty servo you've got on the swing wing mechanism.
Oh, yeah.
That's stock, is it?
That was an old digital servo I pulled out of one of my big helicopters because I wanted something that had way more power than was needed.
Yeah, I watched some videos of stock ones, and it seemed pretty iffy.
Yeah, so, this one is not iffy at all.
Okay. And if you don't mind me getting technical here, I was thinking about... to simplify things, setting up the tailerons as elevons, and then just mixing the ailerons onto that.
Yeah, that's fine. The tailerons are the main controls. The ailerons are okay when wings out and useless with the wings in anyway, so.
Okay. I was going to ask if you thought it would fly okay wings out without ailerons, just on tailerons.
Yeah, it would be no problem.
Okay, I might try that.
If not, you didn't hear it from me.
Gotcha.
It also sounds
anyway, that's what's on my workbench.
Oh, awesome. Although it sounds like you have enough quads on your workbench to fly the actual workbench.
Probably so.
All right. Well, thanks for that. How about Lee? What do you have? And no, we don't care about that 20-year-old project you've been working on for the past 10 years.
Knew you were going to mention that. Well, I'm a big P-38 fan, so I've got two P-38s on my bench right now. I've got the JR Models P-38 Speed Racer, sold by Hobby Lobby, now called Hobby Express, a long time ago. Got it at a swap meet. And it's coming together nicely. I've just taken my sweet time, but it's still... I just finished painting the fuselage. Also got the Flightwork P-38 Red Bull Racer that I got from Terry. And it needs electronics. It needs, you know, the receiver and all that jazz. So haven't had a chance to really pull it apart yet, but I'm really looking forward to that.
That's another one with a bunch of wires.
I saw that. So I'm just going to replace it with fiber optics. As I stated, I fly the Thunder and Lightning, so I'm in a new endeavor working with a local chap who's got a laser cutter. So I've cut several Thunder and Lightning kits, and I've got to package one and build a couple more. So that's going together real nicely. I like how this is working. And then I have this this swap meet box of polystyrene, I call it, a Hobby Shack Cessna 177. It is basically a molded fuselage wing of polystyrene. It's in terrible shape. I paid way too much money for it, but I'm a big, you know, Cessna 177 fan, and I'm slowly nipping away at it, and I think I'll have it ready by best.
Are you going to put retracts on it?
No.
Probably a good move.
Yeah, Terry, I saw that fiberglass P-38, and that's a real nice job. That looks real slick. Do you plan on putting any landing gear on it, or is it just going to be a hand launch?
Well, first, it's Lee, not Terry.
Oh, damn it. I screwed that up,
so
didn't I?
So much alike.
I meant the other Terry.
The other Terry? No, the fiberglass one is non-gear. It's a speeder. It's a speed plate. No, it's a Yankenbank. So it'll just I'll try to put some skid material on the bottom.
Okay, yeah, it looks like it'd be really fast. Overpower that sucker.
I think that's from the day when Czech Republic stuff was good and affordable.
Oh yes.
So I remember turn of the century before the euro was widespread. The exchange rate was really good. You could get some really nice stuff for not much money.
Yeah, remember the old Mega Motors? Those were really good and inexpensive.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, Alpha models. I mean, I love my my Warbirds.
Yeah, all of that stuff, all of the stuff out of Eastern Europe was good. It probably still is. It's just not as affordable as it used to be.
Yeah. Wish the old Soviet bloc came back a little bit slightly. Just for exchange rate. Not for the politics, just for the exchange rate. Okay, well, let's move on. Next thing we want to talk about is...
No. What's on your bench?
My bench. There's nothing on my bench. Yeah, I forgot about my bench. I have a bench. I have a couple of benches. What's on my bench? I have no idea when I'll ever finish it, but I started one of Park Flyer Plastics' B-58 Hustlers, which will be 4 ducted fans on it. And it should be a sweet little ride whenever I get around to finishing it. But I did make some pretty good progress on the wing, and we'll see how it goes from there. And in fact, I just got some foam for the fuselage, which would be one long sucker. So I have no more excuses other than to get to it and make some time to finish working on it. And also, Lee, I think I got it right this time. I actually got around to putting together one of your Thunder and Lightnings that I got from you. It is basically flight ready. Just need some paint and a propeller. Unfortunately,
how much does yours weigh?
I did not weigh it. Probably weighs less than yours, though.
Oh, yeah. It goes without saying.
I think a brick weighs less than Terry's.
But it flies fine.
Does it?
That's good. That's why I'm interested.
It flew really well. I was really impressed with your video.
My only problem is...
The video is crappy, but...
Oh, yeah, the head cam. Oh, yeah, we'll have to talk about that one of our future shows.
A moving black pixel on a field of blue pixels.
Oh. Anyways, My problem is I need a paint scheme. I haven't decided what color I'm going to paint it. So right now it's nude. And one of these days.
They fly well nude.
I'll probably end up flying.
Lee.
What was that?
So does Lee.
Oh, no.
You can call it the streak.
Oh, my eyes. Where's that bleach? It's over here somewhere. Okay, anyway, well, I'll probably end up flying it nude, actually, to test flight and get it until I decide what the heck pick color I'll paint. And I probably will decide by best in October what color I'll paint it, which is only, what, 6 months away? That should be enough time.
Yes. 6 months away. That's an episode right there.
Also sounds like a soap opera. 6 months away. All right, well, enough of that. We blew too much time on that anyways. One thing I want to touch on real quickly, I guess we can call it the news of the week, and that is Airtronix, the sleeper radio control company, has decided that Global, in fact, an importer of Airtronix, is no longer going to be distributing the Airtronix brand, and there's going to be some reorganizations going on, at which point a new distributor apparently will pick up the brand and will be distributing it under the original company name of Sanwa, which is the Japanese company that makes Airtronix. So Airtronix as an entity will be no more, and hopefully at least they will continue as Sanwa. And that's brings up a little bit of nostalgia. You guys have any history running Airtronix radios?
Well, sort of. I would say my first radio was an Airtronix, but Airtronix was just my first good radio. Before the Airtronix, which was probably 1986, I had an Orbit 3-channel, which looked like a Heathkit kind of thing. But we got an Airtronix 4-channel with my first plane, which was a Great Plains PT-20. That must have been somewhere around 1986. And I've still got the chassis for it around here somewhere. I just haven't used it since 1980-something.
How about you, Lee? You have any Airtronix in your past?
I've seen ads for them in magazines, but I have personally never owned an Airtronix radio system.
You've heard of the mythical creatures of Airtronix, which not...
I've heard of them, yes.
Well, like Terry, my experience with Airtronix actually goes way, way back. In fact, my first hobby-quality RC radio was an Airtronix. Way back when I started with RC cars, I think circa 1984-ish, for Christmas, I got a Tamiya Frog, and I also was able to get an Airtronix 2-channel radio, and that worked very well despite my inexperience in running with the thing, and I think I still have the transmitter somewhere between my house and my parents' house somewhere. Just for nostalgia, I doubt it works anymore, but it was a very good radio, and I do believe I actually had one of their better quality 2-channel radios later on. I think they had radios that were the pistol grip with a wheel for racing. I believe I had one of those for a brief period. And then eventually I did get a RC plane Airtronix, I think just a simple 4-channel for a brief period of time, at which I have no idea what happened to it. But I've run Airtronix servos. In fact, I still have some servos from Airtronix here and there. They were the first servos I had that were mini or micro. I guess they would be considered micro nowadays. And
are you putting up air quotes when you say that?
Yes, virtual air quotes. They're somewhere between micro and mini. And I needed some servos. I was converting a Gillow's, one of those little rubber band powered planes, into a RC-049 plane, and standard servos were not only too heavy, they just wouldn't physically fit. And I was able to find some used Airtronix servos that fit in there. That was early 90s, and that was a really happy puppy that I didn't have to pay full price for them. Though I've been to early Airtronix, if you remember, Terry, they had a reverse polarity on them, on the connector.
Right, you couldn't just switch connectors with Futaba. You had to do some finagling.
Yes, and that bit me in the butt a couple times when I forgot to reverse or re-reverse them, whatever, when I swap between like a Futaba and Airtronix. Fortunately, they wised up and changed that later on, but not until I had burnt out a couple of receivers or something.
Yeah.
Well.
When I heard about Airtronix, I was a little bit surprised, only because in RC, the one thing that people are most kind of I don't know if passionate is the word, but militant about is the radio brands. People tend to find one they like and stick with it come hell or high water. So you would think that there's a strong enough group of Airtronics fans to keep them going strong. And I assume all this is because they're not doing well sales-wise.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think some of that self-inflicted. Airtronics itself has always been very good technology-wise. They're bulletproof systems. And there's brand loyalty, but they've been really slow. They were slow to come up with a 2.4 gigahertz spread spectrum, and they've been slow to update their systems to a more modern look and user interface and telemetry and that kind of stuff. At last I heard, they were working on a new model for air, but nothing's come of it. They seem to be focusing more on the ground and RC car stuff. So they've been sort of shooting themselves in the foot, or at least being so slow to come up with new stuff, and that's probably why they kind of never really moved up much, in my opinion.
Yeah, I also wonder if some of the new Chinese brands are having an effect on that. What's the FR Sky, the Taranis? They're very popular, and they're pretty inexpensive for what you get. And I just wonder if that's making it tough on the normal radio manufacturers.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the new competition doesn't help, and they're inexpensive, but hopefully the more traditional manufacturers will get their self into gear and use their considerable assets to come up with radios that can compete, at least in features versus price and that kind of stuff. Well, we'll see. Hopefully Airtronics can stay in the business and come up with something new. I certainly don't want to see them go away, and we'll see what the future holds. Okay, we're going to take a moment for our break, and we'll be right back for our next segment. How about something a little different? Something like an impulse buy model, something you've just bought that you just saw and had to buy, or that you know you're going to buy because you just need to find a way to hide the money from your wife. Anybody want to go first? Anything they saw that they just have to have or just had to get?
Terry.
Don't all speak at once.
I was looking through coverage of Toledo, and it's funny that there's two micro B-25s coming out. FlyZone has one, and so does ParkZone. They have exactly the same wingspan. They have some different features, but two B-25s with the same wingspan. I think I'd like to get one of those. And I'm not sure which one yet.
If I understand, the one will have the AS3X stabilization, one won't. So it'll be interesting to see how they compare.
Yeah, there's some trade-offs. You know, one has the clear canopy glass and the front glass, where the other's foam. One's got the AS3X. One has decal sets. There are enough differences that you'd really kind of have to scratch your chin and decide what was important to you. But it's interesting that they're both being released at the same time.
Maybe you can get them both and compare.
Good idea.
That would be an interesting flight, head-to-head, which one's better, which the plus and minuses of either one. But it is funny how they both come out at about the same time, developed independently with the same model, about the same size micro like that. That is kind of interesting. It would be nice if they had something. That's as nice as a B-25 is. We need to see some of the other oddball ones, like a Black Widow or a A-20 Havoc or something like that.
Well, sure, but that's when you get the B-25 and you gut it and you make your own.
Well, I pulled up the Hobby Zone, Fly Zone P-38, and the specs are about the same as far as size to the B-25, and I love how my Fly Zone P-38 flies, so that would be interesting to see how that twin does. Do you know if that has counter-rotating props?
I want to say one of them did, if not both, but I don't quote me on that.
Lee, how about you? Come on. What you got all hot and bothered about?
I was looking at some photos on RC groups of Ceph, and they had a couple of pilots they were interviewing that were flying the new E-Flight Pawnee Brave Night Flyer. And I have a Hangar 9 Pawnee that I like, and we've flown together to do aerotow. And this is a cute little airplane. It's I don't know if they call it this Hobby Z phone or something, but it looks like EPO. And the LEDs are internal. It's a cute little agile flyer. They mentioned it flies like the Park Zone T28, which is very appealing because I love flying the T28. It's extremely forgiving. It's nice. I will say I saw one at the hobby shop today, and it was right at the door, and it was ready to be picked up and purchased. But the price tag on it is kind of steep. It's $280. And
how big? Bind and fly?
Yeah, it's a Bind and Fly 280, and you know, pulled up the Park Zone, and it's $199. Now this has the AS3X, and it has options for flaps, but they're not included. So I think the price range is a little too high for that. That's just, I mean, I think if it was closer to $200 or $225, I may have dropped the bills to pick it up. But again, it's more like I think I'll hold off and see if it goes on sale or see if I get a gift card. But it's something that I think I'd add to my inventory.
How big is it?
It's 48 inches.
Ah, you probably tow up one of my hand launch gliders with that then.
Possibly. The specs are very close to the Trojan. Amazing. I mean, same battery, you know, same motor. Mm. It's that's why I imagine why they made that comparison. But again, that price just a little steep.
And returning back to the B-25, just from looking at online pictures, it looks like the Fly Zone does have counter-rotating props, but the E-Flight has both in normal direction.
Yeah, but really yes. Need to see how they compare to each other.
We await your review of both.
Yes. With bated breath.
Challenge accepted. Well, that leaves you, Fitz.
Ah, I like electric ducted fans. I swear, the company Freewing is just determined to take all my money. I've already gone through three of their planes. They came out with the Mirage 2000, which I really like because I always wanted a Kaffir, and so I got the Mirage and converted it into a Kaffir, had a Canard, repainted it, and that kind of stuff. And then they came out with a F-104 Starfighter, and I just had to have a Starfighter because it's a Starfighter. And then they came out with Air 14, and I couldn't resist a nice, big, giant F-14 to fly around. And after that, I thought, hey, I'm done. I'm a happy puppy. I can die happy. And now I just found out they're coming out with a nice, big MiG-21. And
I saw that.
That just looks awesome. It's 80mm EDF. Looks like they'll have both 6 and 8S models. It's long. It's like 60-something inches long and with a 30-inch wingspan. Right. It's almost like the Starfighter, you know, big plane, little wings. But they just posted some pictures of it and some video of it flying around, and it looks really nice. It's one of those that we don't have to get.
Yeah, I was looking at the thread on that, and a few of the pictures made it appear as if the intake was blocked off, but what little discussion I saw about it hinted that that's not the case. Have you looked into that?
Yeah, I did. And they confirmed that, no, the intake is not blocked off. The company rep was saying that it's bifurcated around the cockpit. So the intake comes in, goes around the cockpit area, and converges back near the fan. Although there is an auxiliary air inlet on the bottom somewhere as well. But it's certainly not blocked off.
Okay. Some sort of illusion in the photos.
Yeah, I think because just the way it's mounted, or maybe the colors or something, it makes it look blocked off. Because a few people were confused too and said, hey, it looks blocked off. And they came in and unequivocally said, no, it's not blocked off, which is really nice. And I've always kind of wanted a MiG-21. I think HET made one some time ago, a little tiny one, 70mm or something like that. But the rule on the word on the street was it didn't fly all that well.
You're now calling 70mm tiny.
It's all relative, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think the model itself actually was pretty small. Even though it was 70mm, it was pretty small.
Right. Was that round cell days or after that?
I believe it was right on the trailing edge of the round cell days. So they could do round cell or lithiums. But yeah, it was bungee launch, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was the Stone Age.
Right. Lead sled.
Yeah. So now we got flaps and retracts, and it looks really nice. It looked like it flew really nice. And they had like a really neat paint scheme where it was a silver, but he had airbrushed the panel lines. And it just had a lot of character to it.
Yeah, that paint job scared me. If you had to fly that on an overcast day, it seems like it would get lost.
Yeah. Well, they were flying it in the rain, though. The video they had.
Okay, I haven't seen the video.
There's a video, and it was actually literally drizzling, and they were flying it around with a F-86 in formation and whatnot. It didn't look too bad, so we'll see. But there are some colorful paint schemes you can do to it, too.
So. Oh, sure. Yeah, that's one where there's tons.
Yeah, so they're calling it for some delivery sometime in the summertime. I think they said pre-order will come up in another month or two. So,
are you on the list?
Not yet, but I'm going to save my pennies, and when they do the pre-orders, I'll probably put myself down. I had to decide, since they have a 6 and an 8S, which one to go with. I'm sort of split on the two. My first instinct is to go 8S because more power. But it might be a plane that's just nice to fly as a lightweight thing. So, yeah, we'll see.
I just want to add, you have like one of our 5 listeners going on the internet trying to find out what a round cell is.
The round cell days, back when we had to fly with NiCad batteries or nickel metal hydrides, which are, you know, they both were literally round, like your double A's and C-size batteries. And we often had to make our own battery packs using specialized soldering irons with a T-type head on it or something like that.
A hammerhead.
Hammerhead, yes. I still have my hammerhead somewhere.
Yeah, me too.
Wonder how many people have never flown the NiCads or lithium batteries of only, nickel metal hydrides only flown lithium. That'd be interesting.
Well, sub-C has always been the talk of discussion, and then having a T adapter on your soldering iron to shove them together and make a pack.
Yes.
I don't know the struggle.
Yes.
They don't know the struggle.
Don't know the struggle, yes.
I was no less happy in those days. I was just as satisfied working with those as I am now.
I claim that it was actually a little bit more part of satisfaction because you've got this heavy sled thing to fly, and if you get to fly really well with these round cell batteries and impress all your glow friends.
Right. And it required some knowledge to make it work. You couldn't just slap it together. But I think there's a little bit more leeway to fudge it these days.
Yes.
And those long 3-minute flights.
Felt like forever.
But yeah, you had to know your watts per pound and propping your motor for the most power versus time, flight time and that kind of stuff. And it was, those days were kind of really pretty interesting and pretty neat, actually. I had a good time.
Yeah, same here. And that's why I think that the designs from that era make the very best conversions for brushless and LiPo power today. They were designed to fly with heavier batteries and low-power brushed motors and still balance. And so that you cut the weight by a third and double the power, and good things happen.
Yes, I had one of Gary Wright's E3Ds from way back when, one of his early kits. And that was the epitome of such a design. It was designed for the least amount of weight that the thing would still hold itself together. And I think he had round cells and a little RC car motor on a gearbox flying the thing with a big prop.
Oh, that's right. The Magnetic Mayhem.
Yes, Magnetic Mayhem on a gear.
Oh, my gosh. I have one of those.
Yes. I've gone through a couple, too. And it flew good like that. And then later on, I ripped all that out and put in a brushless outrunner and I think a 3-cell something. And the thing would hover at a third throttle. I mean, it was just an amazing thing to fly. I would take it out for our club fun flies. I'd always place second or first in at least one of the events with the thing because it was just such a great plane until it met its demise last year.
Uh-oh.
But I want to talk about that. You want to see a grown man cry, then I'll talk about it. But anyways, I had my fun with it. And yeah, you're right, Terry. Those were the good old good days. Good old bad days.
Here's the big question, though. Do you still have any NiCads in your collection?
Yes.
That's bad. Are you using them as building weights?
I trying to think. For a while, I had a bunch of loose cells because I bought some that were on sale to build packs, and then for whatever reason, they sat around. But I think I still have some packs out there that are good, and why would I throw away good batteries? I'll use them one day, maybe.
Well, I got you beat. I have a bunch, and not only do I use them as weight for building stuff, I actually have one pack that I still occasionally use in one of my airplanes. I have a...
Because it needs the weight?
Well, that and... it's a combination of... No, it doesn't really... Well, it might need some nose weight. Two reasons. A, those batteries are still good at producing high power, and it's a high-powered application. And B, I've just been too lazy to take it out of the airframe. I have a
hotliner. Is this your F-18?
No, this is the hotliner I have, the little smart hotliner that's also pretty ancient. And the hotliner doesn't need a lot of runtime. It just needs to produce 100 amps for 5-10 seconds. It goes straight up, and the extra ballast actually does help on the downwind to pick up speed. And so these batteries, those nickel metal hydrides I've had in there forever, and every time I take this thing out, it works. Sometimes the second flight is noticeably better than the first flight as they warm up and get broken in again. But they're still in the plane in my garage. They still run. I still use it every once in a while.
They're bulletproof. Jeez.
Yeah,
bulletproof. Just think, Terry, if you had brought those ICADs to the Weatherford swap meet, you might have had some old-timers going, "I've been looking for those."
Something tells me I made the right move.
All right, speaking of the right move, how about we talk about something that's I thought would be a neat topic, and that's your best save. Something you did to save your plane from imminent demise. Can you guys think of anything?
Can it be accidental?
Hey, anything goes, right?
Okay.
Who wants to go first?
You want me to go first, then?
Sure.
Okay. So, speaking of those golden oldie days, I forget when it was, but it was probably around 2000. Diamond used to have these foam kits of the Messerschmitt ME-163 that was a Speed 400 tractor setup. And I think it was about a 30-inch wingspan model and ran on seven 500AR battery packs, seven-cell 500AR. So, by today's standards, it would have been pretty heavy, but back then it was a rocket ship, and I had to bungee launch it. Mm. But I got one of these things, and I built it, and I did scale camouflage, and I can tell you now that the German camouflage works.
Even really well.
Yes.
Das Camouflage is good, ja?
Yeah. I was flying in a field that was bordered by these tall pine trees and doing a low pass, and once I got below the tree line, I totally lost it, and I just yanked back on the stick and prayed for the best, and next thing I know, it went shooting up above the trees again, and so I saved it that time just out of pure dumb luck, and then I ended up crashing it sometime later. it was fun while it lasted.
Hey, but you got the save. You can brag about it.
Yes. Right.
I got one. Well, years ago, I had a plane called the Ace GLH. I believe the GLH stands for Go Like Hell. It was a small plane powered by a Cox 049 engine, and I believe they were designed around a pylon racing class size for that era. And this was back when I flew a lot of glow planes before I did much into electric. And this plane was pretty neat. It was a little simple build, and my first flight, and I built it as per instructions, mostly, as you'll find out in a second. And so I brought this thing out to the field, and I started it up, and I had a friend of mine give it a hand launch for me. My maiden flight, I said, "Hey, can you give me a nice, good throw so I can keep my hands on the sticks?" And apparently my friend thought he was in some sort of Olympic javelin throwing contest. He gave it a throw, and he threw it so hard that as soon as he let go, I immediately realized I had no elevator control. He had what happened is, per the instructions, you're supposed to double side tape the elevator servo to the side of the fuselage.
Except, which is just balsa.
Which is just balsa. But there was one little detail that I didn't pay attention to. They say that you're supposed to sort of shellac that side of the fuselage with some epoxy first. So then double-side tape it to the fuselage wall. Well, I didn't do the epoxy. I just double-sided to the raw wood. And so when he threw it, the servo just stayed where it was, and the plane went, you know, due to Newton's third law of motion or something like that. So I had no elevator control. And this is a Coxwell 409 plane, which has no throttle control. So,
so you're left with ailerons only?
Ailerons only. The only saving grace was the elevator was in a slight up position, so it would climb kind of moderately slow, and it went up, because I had no control, like, what's going on? It went up and did a loop by itself, and as it came back around, I basically performed a series of rolls in S-turns using the elevator, since the elevator was fixed in the up position, just to maintain level flight. And after about a minute, I actually got the hang of it, and I was flying this thing around, doing S-turns and rolls, and trying to get it sort of close to the ground so that when the engine finally quit, I can maybe save this thing. And so after about a couple minutes of flying this thing and not wondering how it was going to turn out, and doing whatever tricks I had in my up my sleeve, engine finally quit just as I pulled it level about a foot or two off the ground and dead-sticked it, and all I did was break off the motor mount, which was an easy fix. And so I was quite happy, and all the other guys in the field were really impressed, and they said that I had bragging rights for the day for pulling that off and having a plane survive it.
As Bob Hoover said, fly it all the way into the crash.
I flew it all the way to the crash. That is exactly right.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Yes, I never
forgot. I think I would have just put the transmitter down once I realized there was no elevator.
And this was relatively early in my flying career, so I wasn't the experienced old ham I was now.
So are you guys Strange Brew fans?
Yes, you hoser.
So that reminds me of when they're driving in the van and they realize the brakes are out. Well, no point in steering now.
All right, Lee, what's your best save? You got to have one, don't you?
It happened at Best. And, Terry, you know my Kyosho Cessna 177, right?
I thought you had many of them.
I do. But I think it was the one where you actually sat down with me while I fixed the motor.
That's starting to sound familiar.
I think you were sitting with me one year when I was trying to change the motor angle. It was just too high. It kept wanting to climb on me.
Okay, that's familiar now. And for those who don't know, Best is a fly-in a little bit north of Houston. They do once a year, an electric-only fly-in.
At Tri-County Barnstormers. Look it up.
Yeah, nice place.
So I had and that's the problem when you take lots of planes to an event. You have one transmitter and you have several model memories, and you work on one plane and you fly another. And so I had finished working on that Kyosho Cessna, but I had flown something else, and I'm sure I'm not the only person who's had this, but I had a model memory mishap. And because I was sitting there with the Kyosho thinking I had the right one on, I took it to the runway and took it off, and all this happened in seconds. But because it's one of my favorite planes, I consider it my best save. And had elevator control, took off, and my ailerons were reversed.
Oh.
And I don't know if you've ever flown with opposite ailerons, and I'm going to say unintentionally, because I don't think you should try it anytime. but it's extremely awkward. I mean, once you yank and bank planes, and you're used to that, it was very awkward. And even though I had rudder control, I was having a tough time. And finally, to the point where I had enough altitude, I lost control and I got her on her back. But this is a high wing with dihedral, so she did not like that. So at that point, once she was inverted, I just finally decided, maybe I should stop messing with the ailerons. And I killed the engine, and she was pointing towards the that red barn across the way, and I just glided her down inverted into the hayfield, and nary a Nary a scratch. Went out there, and she just, I mean, I just was able to get her down to hover. And I mean, that's one of the amazing things about that plane. I mean, even with dihedral and high wing, she flew very well upside down and landed. And I mean, I was shaken. All I saw in my head was that thing was about to go flying into several pieces. But that was probably my best save, was actually landing a plane upside down.
All right. So to summarize, Fitz can fly without an elevator, but you can't fly with the reversed ailerons.
Oh.
And I can't see camouflage. Well, I have seen someone successfully land an airplane back on the runway with reversed ailerons. This happened at the Johnson Space Center Club.
Oh.
And it was a trainer-type plane, and the rudder was fine. So I kept telling him, nah, just use rudder. It'll turn fine with only that. But he was bound and determined to use ailerons, and he did it. I was impressed.
Well, how long was that flight? I mean, I had just taken off, and by that time I was oscillating so drastically, trying to correct and not understanding it. Because, you know, once you have a plane that you're so used to flying, and, I mean, you can literally just, it's like night flying. Once you kind of get a feel for an airplane, you don't actually have to see it quite well. You kind of know its movements. But I don't know how he could have gotten, like, good altitude.
I don't remember that precisely, but I know he did it. And wow. I know it was impressive.
Now I hear these stories, and I say to myself, I know this is probably against AMA safety rules, but remember earlier we were talking about the T-28 Trojan day where we were all flying 28s trying to do touch and goes within a box. I wonder if you can you take a model and reverse every control surface on, take off, do a circle, and land? Oh, or is that just wrong?
It's possible.
but
you know, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. Actually, me and some other guy were talking about doing something like that, where you'd have to use the old 72 megahertz transmitter, but have two transmitters on the same channel, but one was normal and one was reversed. So you would take off and then hand somebody a transmitter with, like, everything reversed and see if they could fly the plane down. It'd be like a competition or something. It might be.
But you can really do that with a buddy box, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, you can do a buddy box.
Reverse the smoke and hole in the ground would be the same, no matter how you do it.
Yeah, you'd be willing to sacrifice your plane.
Do you think you could do it? Like, right now, as we are not practicing it, do you think you could take a high-wing trainer and take off, circle, and land with everything backwards?
I have no idea.
I think I could handle elevator, and that's about it.
Only one of the axes you could do, but not all three or four.
No, I wouldn't even say one axis, just elevator.
Could you just flip the transmitter upside down?
Oh boy!
And then on try to just stay on one stick because everything. Then all that's opposite too.
There you go.
The opposite hands.
Does somebody make a near indestructible trainer-like plane? We could try this on.
Do it on the simulator first. That's
no,
good
that's
enough.
No fun. No,
no, that's not fun.
No,
come
no
on,
practice. No, are you a man or a mouse? Come on.
All right. Well, let's do it. Video or it didn't happen.
Okay.
Don't try it at home, kids. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with our final segment. All right. Well, I think we'll try to touch on our third segment real quick. Well, about a month ago, Terry Lee and I, we went up to the Weatherford Swap Meet. Weatherford's a little town just west of Fort Worth, Texas. And it's a place I actually used to live in that area, and I would go to the Weatherford Swap Meet quite often. And I always looked forward to it because it took place over 2 days, which was pretty unusual for swap meets. And since I had been there before, and it was nice to go back after being away for some time, but for Lee and Terry, it was you guys' first time being there. What did you guys think of it?
Well, I should clarify that you went up to Weatherford. I went down to Weatherford. I guess it's kind of the halfway point for us, or pretty close to. But I thought it was a good event. I wasn't sure what to expect. I hadn't been to a swap meet since whenever it was in Houston several years ago. And while it didn't live up to the hype, it was good. I sold a lot of stuff. I bought a few things. No complaints here. Lee?
I've been to a couple of local swap meets here in Houston. None of them were as big as the one in Weatherford, so that was nice. It was cold. did not bring a jacket, so it was quite nippy going back and forth from
cold.
The car.
There weren't any snow on the ground.
It was cold. It was 38, and I did not have any protection for that. But anyway, it was.
You are a true Houston native.
Yes, really.
Yes.
It's below 50. It's cold.
Well, I wrote some notes down here. I thought the drive was great, made better by having a friend tagging along. So it was nice to have Fitz with me, and it made the drive go quick. It was a good variety of stuff. It wasn't just gas or glow planes. A lot of people said since this one's been around for so long, you just have a whole bunch of old timers selling glow stuff. But it wasn't. It was a good variety. I personally got a couple of good deals, but I think nothing spectacular. I did look around, and I thought the auction, though, that was my only complaint, is that the auction was very slow, took forever, and they needed to speed it up a little bit, because we were already running out of time, and maybe we caught the first 5-10 items, but there were so many neat things, and especially that large SR-71 Blackbird, I would have liked to seen how much that went for.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Gary if he sold it or if it went back home with him. That was Gary Jones, SR-71.
Yeah, I found out about that later. There's actually a video of it on YouTube, and he's flying indoors for such a large plane. It was really...
Holy smokes!
Yes, he was flying indoors. It was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, it's big, slow, and loud.
Yeah. But you're right. That's one of the neat things about the Weatherford swap meets. You almost always find something really interesting and really unusual there. Even if it's not the crowd that you expect, there's always some gems to be found in the rough, so to speak.
Yeah, talking to some of our neighbors there, I got the impression that in years past, it was kind of a rush right when they opened the doors of mobs of people. And we certainly didn't see that. But there was a steady stream of people going in and out on both days.
Yeah, it was a pretty decent crowd. Like I said, it's been more busy. I remember, maybe 10 years ago where there were literally people were buying stuff out of your hand as you're walking in the door with your stuff from the parking lot. And the parking lot being a little more full with, so to speak, tailgate sellers and that kind of stuff. But
I have to say, that was the funny thing. We both saw Fitz when we first showed up, all those people in line. I was like, oh, these people are waiting in line. But when you think about it, they had the best seat because they saw everything going in and they just started working in their head. Okay, I gotta get that or else, and go find out where that guy is. They were seeing everything, unlike us. We were going back and forth. We were so busy, we didn't have any idea what was that.
Yeah, they had a nice preview seat there for everything. But it was good that we all got sort of good, pretty good deals. We sold some stuff and we were able to find a couple of good deals on stuff. I found it funny that I was able to sell a plane that I bought there about 10 years ago, and I couldn't sell anywhere around here and there. It sold pretty quickly. So life goes in circles, I guess.
Yeah, I also had an interesting phenomenon there. I took that Telemaster, the new inbox Telemaster, that I thought would sell really quickly, but it just kind of sat there over the weekend. And then literally in the last 5 minutes we were there, as I was packing everything up, I had four people come and try to buy it. And a couple lowballers, and then one guy who made a decent offer that I rejected, and then another guy who was standing right behind him who was ready to take my counteroffer. So,
oh, nice.
It's just funny how that stuff plays out. I guess people trying to snipe like they do on eBay.
Yeah, wasn't it?
It was a good deal.
Yeah.
It was a good deal. I let it go for $200.
Wow, and that was for the giant, ginormous Telemaster. It was like 90-something inch.
Yeah, the 95-incher.
You lift small children with it?
Yes, large children, probably.
Yeah, that's a classic design. Was there some guy that really lowballed you, offered you $20 for something ridiculous?
Offered it to all three of us.
Same thing. I think that was the Twin Star.
Was it?
Yeah, Twin Star? He kept. No. It was the UAV, wasn't it?
No, I thought it was the Twin Star.
Oh, okay.
But either way, it's just as ridiculous for either one.
Yeah.
Well, but I can't blame a guy for trying.
That's true. he had pretty good gall in that guy then. sounds like Jeff, my cameraman. He's always offering 20. You crash a plane, I'll give you $20 for it.
Somebody probably takes it every now and then.
Yes, I guess, you know, every once in a while it works. Just like, you know, asking a girl out for a date, right? You ask 100 girls, eventually one's going to say yes.
Yeah, you got to play the odds.
Except for my luck, they all just shoot me.
Comparing Weatherford to the Perry, I haven't been there, but some guys at our club shared their trip to the Perry swap meet, and they said stuff was just flying off the table. They were getting stuff pennies on the dollar, and he showed me this one bag of maybe 6 glow engines he got for $5.
Wow.
I mean, and they looked good. I mean, it's not like they were missing the throttle intake or the carb intake, but it was just, I mean, they said there were just so many deals to be offered there. So,
well, the definition of a good deal depends on which side of the table you're standing on.
Oh, Zen Master Terry here.
Well, I went to the swap meet primarily to sell, so if I had to give stuff away pennies on the dollar, I would have had a very different impression of the meet. Oh. But I didn't think that was the case on Weatherford. I, for the most part, got what I asked, and are very close to.
So it sounds like we need to take a road trip to Perry then, doesn't it?
Not to sell, but to buy, yes.
Just to experience it. Well, awesome. Well, hopefully maybe one day, one of these centuries, we'll be able to make it out there and see what all the excitement's about. All right, guys. Well, well, thanks for joining us in our very first podcast. Hopefully you're not bored to gnaw your own arm off to escape. And hopefully we'll get another one going, and we'll talk about something new and exciting and interesting, at least to us. We don't care about you.
I was about to offer the counterpoint. I think we definitely have our own list of things we'd like to talk about, but we're also receptive to ideas. So
yeah,
let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Send us a note if you think we should talk about something or have a question or a rant. We'll be happy to talk about it. We all have our opinions, and we can fight it out and make it entertaining. Lee, got any last thoughts?
that's a wrap.
And that's a wrap. See you on the flip side.
Goodbye.